Hi, I'm Bunny Guinness, and this is my podcast, Bunny in the Garden, with someone special. Someone who is well known for something other than their green fingers, but who is also a mustard-keen gardener. I'll discover them through their garden, why, how, and when they garden, the best tips they've learnt, and their gardening style and approach. Today, I'm in the beautiful garden of the only daughter of the late Sir Terence Conran, Sophie Conran. Sophie's brothers, Tom and Edmund, are restaurateurs. Her half-brothers, Jasper Conran, is a fashion designer. And her other half-brother is a product designer, Sebastian Conran. Perhaps Sophie's known best for her Sophie Conran brand. Sophie, you must have been totally immersed in design, growing up with Terence Conran and his wife, your mother, Caroline. Surely life was just all about design.
It was a lot about design, but it was also a lot about gardens. And I grew up on a building site, which was great fun, because my parents bought an old school. And all throughout my childhood, they were building it. There was builders around. It was a very large, and they were knocking things down and building things, and there was a walled garden filled with Christmas trees that was turned by my mother and my father actually into this wonderful vegetable garden, and there was broken down greenhouses that they rebuilt. So it was great to be around all of that energy.
Oh, wow. And so were they developing habitat at that point? Or what point was his career, do you remember, as a child, as a five-year-old?
Well, habitat was started the year before I was born. And then we moved to the country when I was about six. So it was, and habitat was going great guns. Mm. And they were moving to Wallingford. They had a big office space and large shops in Wallingford. So there was this fantastic energy because it was all working and it was great. There was a lot of cooking going on. My mum's a cookery writer. Mm. And we had lots of work people, as you said. There was a lot of work and design around.
It was extraordinary. I mean, I remember as a child that when he came on the scene and he brought that sort of Scandinavian style and the simplicity to the UK, it was in the 60s, wasn't it? Completely different from anything we'd seen before. And it was extraordinarily affordable. It was so fresh. It was so different. It made such a massive mark. I can imagine that him growing that business, having seen the potential, had the germ of the idea, and the two of them then growing that business, it's a completely different skill set, isn't it? But he obviously did it extremely successful, and it's still around today.
It's still around today. Those ideas are still around today. And it came from enthusiasm and wanting to make something new and being excited about the possibilities of life, I think.
Yes, and when you were renovating that house, was it full of habitat style things, or was it things he picked up, or they both picked up from wherever?
It was a mixture of habitat things that he'd found, so we might get samples. I remember particularly there was a tubular steel four-poster bed that arrived, and this was kind of innovative. It was bright yellow.
Wow. And
then my mother decided she was going to paint everything yellow. So the bird cage got painted yellow. The chest of drawers got painted yellow. It was very, very fun.
I have to say, yellow is my favourite colour. And when I walked into your sort of kitchen area, was it? It was bright yellow, which I love. My kitchen is bright yellow. And I remember reading a piece when they had an experiment and people went into a series of different coloured rooms. One was yellow, one was blue, one was red, one was green. And yellow was the one that was full of graffiti because they say it's an aggressive colour. But to me, I find it highly stimulating and I love it. Whereas green is obviously peaceful and blue is meant to be soothing. And it's fascinating the effect that colour has.
It's totally fascinating. I love the ideas that colours has an effect on you. And actually my grandfather, my dad's father, was he had a paint company, and then unfortunately I think during the war the factory was bombed, and because it was something called gum copal, the whole thing went up in flames.
Whoa.
And then afterwards he was selling paint, so he would go round institutions like schools and hospitals and prisons and sell paint. And he would sell it on what the colour of the paint would do to you psychologically. Wow. So it's something that I've always been very interested in. Mm. And I think that there's a great positivity to yellow. I think that's why at this time of year, we've got all of the yellow flowers. We've got the primroses and the daffodils, and suddenly it's bringing a bit of sunshine in, isn't it?
Yes, the winter aconites, Aranthus, the first thing to come out, the little yellow gems that I love. You've got masses of them, have you?
Masses of them. Ah. And what's really lovely about them is they're growing in all of the beech leaves. So
yes.
So you've got this fantastic copper colour behind them.
Mm.
And then there they are with their little
frills. Yes, no, they're lovely. A gardener once, I went to a visit to a garden, I think for Gardener's Question Time, and it was covered in winter aconites. And he said what he does to spread them is he just picks the seed heads. You obviously don't need to do this, but I need to do this.
I do need to do it.
And he spreads them, the seed heads, and then it's a slow process. But he found that the best way to naturalise them. I do dig up clumps occasionally and move them, but they're slow, aren't they? And when you get that massive cover of them, I think they're the nicest early spring bulb because of those yellow colours. And the rest of the year I go off yellow, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I find it too aggressive as a flower, not in the house obviously, but as a flower outside I find it too sharp.
I think it's got its place, and I think I've always been very anti-yellow, but I think I'm coming round to it.
Mm.
And I think depending on how you use it, I love sunflowers and Monada, and
yes,
I think look great.
Yeah, because they are simpler, not too much colour within the thing. It's interesting because I was sort of researching things back on you, and I saw a fabulous quote that your father said to someone, which I think says a lot. He said, Someone, this is from someone who worked for him for something, and they'd put a vase on his table or something, and it was with Drosophila and daffodils. And he said, Drosophila's fine, daffodils are lovely, but not in the same effing vase. And I thought that was really fascinating because he got really irate with that because of the combination they'd chosen. And I quite agree with him, but if I put a vase of those things on my kitchen table, my husband wouldn't even notice. Your father's obviously really highly tuned to that sort of thing, what goes together and what doesn't. And also, obviously, he's right in the fact that the slime from the daffodils, you're not meant to put anything else with them, are you, in a vase, because they kill all the other things alongside.
I didn't know that.
I think he was doing it from aesthetics, wasn't
he? I think
it
was definitely aesthetics. Yeah. I mean, yes, he liked the way things looked. And he liked things simple as well. He didn't like things overly tweaked and complicated.
Yeah.
You know, a bunch of daffodils. It's just a bunch of daffodils, and that's how it is, and it's a kind of wonderful herald of this time of year.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So the two of them obviously had a wonderful marriage for about while. They had a marriage for 30 years. Your mother, a leading cookery writer, and she helped him with the business, build it all up all the way through, did she?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of her in everything that was done together. And she's fantastic cook and cookery writer, but she's also great with interiors and style. Very, very stylish, my mum.
Yeah. So they obviously had a huge influence on their children. And then when I remember reading about their breakup, and there was sort of, it hit the front page news, didn't it, because of the dispute over the financial settlement. And he was outraged that for cooking a few meals that she would get such a share of his fortune. And I think that was groundbreaking, because I think people realised what she did, and I think most women thought she deserved it. But whether men thought the same then, I don't know. But now I think they would.
Well, I remember phoning, there was a newspaper headline that said that she just cooked a few meals, and I phoned him up and I said, "You must be the most unpopular man in Britain today." Because she didn't just cook a few meals, she was really, really a part of everything that went on. Mm. And I don't know. I think I didn't really see it at the time that it was a tipping point, but it was.
Mm.
It was. And I think that it should just be fair. You know, I think that divorce is a horrible thing.
Yeah.
And It was very sad. It was very sad.
Yeah. But it was just interesting that it happened like that. But really, I would imagine most unpleasant, really. Going back to your garden here, we're standing at the front of your house. And when we came in down the drive this morning, ahead of you, you see this beautiful Regency house. And what is so lovely about it is the way it's set, because it's on the side of a hill, and they've obviously levelled the forecourt in front of the house for the arrival zone a bit, with a sort of in and out drive. But to the left, we've got an informal bank coming down, and then to the right, there's a lovely old red brick wall, which contains the space. So yeah, you've got a lovely feeling of containment, but you're aware there's something amazing on the other side of the house. It works very well, doesn't it? It's a really lovely approach, I think. And I love the gate details you've got in that wall. You've got a sort of lovely pedestrian gate that you can see through, the top half, a wooden door, really. And then you've got some nice double gates there with little brick piers, quite big brick piers. And then you've got another door there. So you've sensed that there's a lot going on around you, but it's very contained. And next to the house, I see a cedar very, very close. Is it a deodar cedar? And it's probably 3 metres from the house wall at max.
I have to keep on getting it checked because there's cracking in the house.
Is there?
And we're not sure if the cedar's doing it. I mean, we've had it looked at a couple of times and they say that it isn't. But, you know, a house this old is always going to have some sort of movement.
Yeah. And they never built them with foundations, did they? A house of this period will just
be
fitting on a few stones.
It has got
a basement, so it will have a basement then, yeah. But I always remember where I did a programme on Capability Brown, and that was one of his strategies. He put cedars quite close to the house to frame them. But he didn't normally go that close. But it does... They do frame the house beautifully and balance it up, don't they?
And also there's an extension behind there that's not very pretty.
That's later, much later, isn't it?
It's not that much later.
Oh.
It's only about 30 years later than the main house, but done in a very different style. And it does cover it.
Yeah.
But I think when they planted this tree, they had no idea how big it was going to get.
It's a very common problem, isn't it? And there's another lovely cedar behind, which is at a more respectable distance away from
the
house.
It's more respectable, and it's quite a sort of amazing thing. It's lost a lot of limbs, so it's kind of quite majestic in a way.
Yes.
It's battle-worn.
Yeah, I always remember the cedar at Highgrove, which is why King Charles bought Highgrove, for the beautiful cedar. But then in the end, all the people around him said it was just too dangerous to have this tree with these potentially dropping limbs with the heirs to the throne knocking around underneath. And everything
was sad.
Exactly. So they removed it and he planted another one. But they do take a long time to go to any size. And I remember at Burley Park, they planted quite a few cedars. Capability planted a load back in the 1700s, but they planted more, and they found they have to plant them small. If you move in these big ones, they just sit there and they just don't do much for so long. It's easier to plant them smaller, and then they get in and going. But they are wonderful in the landscape, I think, aren't they?
They're wonderful.
You should be very patient.
So when the house that I grew up in, this old school had been the house that was built by the guy that built all the canals.
Yes.
So it's this beautiful old house, and it had a huge cedar, and we had a tree house in it.
Ah.
And then one year it blew down.
The cedar or the tree house?
The cedar. This colossal
giant
collapsed in the garden. It was very sad.
Oh dear, very, very sad. And outside your front door, you've got these lovely sort of circular steps coming down. Beautifully detailed steps, aren't they, in this house? They always have those beautiful bullnose copings, big chunks of stone, real stone steps. They're so lovely. They really didn't scrimp in those days, did they?
They didn't. And so I've just had them all dismantled and put back together.
Oh,
because
right.
They were collapsing. But I didn't really go too far. I wanted to keep part of the patina of the house.
Yeah, I love bits of patina. They're just important, aren't they? And then you've got a fabulous collection of tulips and box and all sorts of things bursting into here, and snowdrops in pots. It's lovely, isn't it? And you keep changing these.
Yeah,
obviously.
We keep changing. It's got lots of pots out here and they change throughout the year. I kind of just get a little bit over enthusiastic about pots, but carried away.
Yes. And you sell pots, do you, on the Sophie Conran range?
Not at the moment.
Are you going to?
I've probably.
Oh, good. And the other thing I notice on arrival is all the way down your drive, you've got daffodils, haven't you, in full
yes.
bottle. Views of lovely black sheep. Your
beautiful.
Sheep.
Hebrideans.
Hebrideans. They yeah. are quite difficult to breed from, aren't they?
They don't seem to be having any problems.
Oh, good. I thought they were difficult. Oh, nice. No, they're so beautiful. They're not self-shedding, are they? You have to shear them.
We're shearing them.
Oh, right. Yes,
we are. I'm just learning about it. I've got a lovely chap called Chris, who's a shepherd, who comes once a month or whenever there's a panic and is helping me with them. But it's lovely having them there, keeping the lawn down, keeping... And adding animation, you know, they're such funny creatures. They'll do, you know, really, really silly things. And then we had our first lambs last year, so this year they should be coming any minute.
Oh, wow. So we have Surrey sheep because we don't have a shepherd. And we don't, they're self-shearing. So, and that, which is an advantage. But they're smaller than your Hebrideans. But they are quite tasty. But I always think of them as edible lawnmowers. But more than that, in that they're just so beautiful. As you say, they animate the landscape.
Yeah.
I would rather look at some sheep or cattle than Henry Moore. Sorry, Henry Moore. Any day, because I just think they're fascinating creatures.
They are fascinating. Mm. And they really play. What's lovely about them is watching them playing. And sometimes they'll just get in one straight line. And you're like... Well, what are you doing?
And when they have their lambs, all to get together in a gang. Do you find this with ours? And in the evening, it's like hijinks, and they all race around together on their own, the tiny little lambs. And they frolic and buck, and they're obviously playing tag and 40-40 and all those sort of games. But they're so resilient as well. I think they're lovely. But anyway, should we go and see another part? Take me to the next part. Which we see next?
We can go around here. So we are trying to do a sort of training the roses. So this is a very exciting time of year because of what's happening to the roses. And do you know Niff Barnes? Have you heard of someone
who trains them with a very in a very superior fashion with curves?
Yeah.
Yes.
So we went off and did a course with her.
Yes.
So we're learning, and gradually we're going to be doing more and more.
So for people who don't know, so Niff Barnes, she tends to pull them into curves down, doesn't she?
Yes.
And train the roses instead of having them horizontal on the wall. I think it sort of started at Sissinghurst, didn't it, with one of the gardeners from Sissinghurst, and it's caught on. And obviously when you bend a rose shoot down, away from going upwards, it increases its propensity to put out flower buds. And so you get a lot more flowers. And also in winter, so now they're coming into leaf, aren't they?
Yeah, they're looking
But they
lovely.
Look beautiful because you've got these up these tripods of hazel sticks or similar.
Yeah.
You've wound them around into these beautiful shapes. And that way, I think the rose looks splendid pretty much all the year, doesn't it? Even on the sticks in the winter.
So it's looking like a basket weave, isn't it?
Really nice.
And nice, lovely new shoots.
And then you've got one in a urn, and you're putting sort of hoops over it, and you're going to tie it in a dome over it, are you? So again, you're pulling the shoots down to get more flower. No, they're brilliant, aren't they? Really nice. I love roses.
So we're going to go around here, and this is the south side of the house.
Oh, so the what south I've done side here, looks into the bank.
It looks into the bank. And so in the winter, the sun is very low and we don't get much sun at all in the house. But at this time, it's just going over the woods. So, yes, it goes up, the bank goes up, and then there's a beech wood at the top.
But what is extraordinary is you haven't got any doors coming out onto the south side.
No.
So the main frontage faces west, so you get the evening sun. That's interesting. But they did that because, why do you think? I suppose because of the lie of the land.
Maybe because of the lie of the land, but also sun wasn't very popular then. You wanted to keep away from the sun. There was all the parasols and...
Right, of course, yeah. Wonderful Magnolia grandiflora, which looks pretty massive. It's probably about 20 years old.
No, I put these in.
Oh, wow, so you bought big ones?
Not particularly. They were only about 6 feet tall.
That is extraordinary. So they must be now 4 meters high?
Yes.
With a trunk...
they're just really happy.
On a south wall with a trunk diameter of about 200 mil, I would say. Quite big, aren't
they? They're getting really big.
Yeah. Amazing.
So one of the things with the magnolia is I wanted to have those pillars of magnolia.
Yes.
Where it's just leaves against the house, because I've seen them a few places and thought how chic they are. But if you do that, you don't get flowers. So I've just let them go a little bit.
It's
so they look a bit leggy and a little bit at this time of year anyway.
But you could do that. Because if you go to Pistoia, have you ever been to Pistoia in Italy, where they grow thousands of acres of huge plants, including Magnolia grandiflora like these, as pleached Magnolia grandiflora, sort of 3 meter high. They do them as hedges. They do them as mophead standards. So you could cut those back and then you wouldn't get flowers the next year, but you would the year after, I think. They would just bush out rather like a hedge and then you could flare them out at the top like that. But
you'd cut the main trunk, would you?
No, not the main trunk. But you see, you've got a long lateral coming from near the bottom, which is maybe 2 meters long.
Yeah.
And it's coming out over the flower bed.
Yeah.
Which you probably don't want particularly, do you?
Not particularly.
So I would take off all the, because you're in between two lovely big windows, which are maybe a meter and a half apart. So I would trim all those laterals apart.
Yeah.
Back to maybe two-thirds of them off, keep the trunk, and then you would have a thicker green going up the side in those small narrow gaps, and then I would train them at the top how I wanted them to go. You probably don't want them to get up to the first floor windows, do you, because they're such a pain to then cut at that point.
Well, so
I quite high.
Like, so this is my bathroom.
Yes.
I quite like sticking my head out and smelling the flowers.
Oh, right. Well, take it that high, but how you will cut it at that point, I know, because at Highgrove, with their magnolias, they bring in those mobile platforms.
A cherry picker.
Cherry picker to do it, which is quite an operation. But sometimes we just keep them up to the ground floor and then we take them across between the ground floor and the first floor. So you can train Magnolia grandiflora very intensely how you want, and you will still get flowers the next year on. They are tough things, and they're obviously so happy here. I cannot believe they've only been in that time. That's magnificent.
That one as well.
Oh, yes. Wow. And so often I wonder, you see them, don't you, that have been by houses, right by the house walls, that are maybe 100 years old, and you see them with huge stem diameters. I remember Bob Geldof's house had a massive one up the front. But they don't seem to... bother the foundations much.
No, they don't. Even.
But maybe there are cases where they have, but I've seen so many that have this scenario and the house is fine, which is interesting, isn't it?
So I can actually cut it quite severely.
Yeah.
And it will grow, because I was worried that it wasn't going to green up around the trunk.
I think it will. I think if you cut them back to just beyond where you want them to go, and if you don't believe me, you could do it gingerly with the bottom few and see. But I assure you, if you look at the nurseries in Pistoia and you see how they sell big mature magnolias, how they've trained them, I think if you went to a very old trunk, it might not burst back. But the fact that they grow them as standards and everything, they are, I think, almost a hedging plant, I would say.
Great.
Yeah, they are wonderful. But and then you come round and you see this wonderful view.
Yes.
And this is your east terrace where you have your breakfast and your lunch.
Well,
and your...
when the sun is out and it's
not
warm.
Not in February.
No, but during COVID, actually, we were out here all the time. And that was March. We had great weather.
Oh, yes. This
so, yes,
is
we're
so
looking
nice.
Out over the fields.
It's
and more
lovely.
Sheep down there.
Oh,
I can't see them today,
view.
But...
We saw them on the way there, on the way up the drive. They look beautiful. So you've got this lovely broad terrace in front of this east elevation, lovely flagstones, outdoor sofas. Are these your range?
These are from Oka. They're great, aren't they?
They're lovely. They're really nice sofas and a table. And then a lovely big dining table with the chairs. And what contains this garden? Beyond the terrace, we've got a nice flat area with small formal garden. And then on the left, we've got this lovely old yew hedge with two big plump arches going through. Did you put the arches in?
Yes. Mm. So the yew hedge is obviously very old. It's very, very wide. And it's responded really well. I mean, it took a couple of years. When we first did it, we really took it back.
To bare wood.
And then It's all come back really, really nicely. And actually, I've added a few more bits to enclose the space behind and then put some more on the end to create another arch. But they've literally just gone in.
Yeah. They are beautiful. Though on one job at Stapleford Park, we cut yews that had probably been in since the 19th century, and they were huge trunks, and we cut them down to the base because they had got too open and things, and they sprouted back. And so many hedges. With you can get away with anything pretty much, I think. It just always responds. And they form, presumably, the person who planted that hedge initially to break the southwesterlies, do they? Which are probably your prevalent winds here. They nearly are in this country, aren't they?
They
zoom at us from the southwest, and so they shelter this sitting area.
But it's
beautiful.
Created a lovely, we'll go through there in a minute,
yeah.
It's created a really magical little space down there. But we get winds from all directions. Yeah. We're quite exposed.
Do you? But not an east wind very often, do you?
We do. We get an east wind.
Do you?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
And last year we had a lot of trees down. And we've used the trees. We had someone out with a mobile sawmill.
Yeah.
And we're planking them up, and I'm putting shelves in the kitchen with them, which is kind of quite a nice story.
Lovely. So what sort of wood are they?
We had some poplar, but there's ash. Mm. And then beech. And then we've had another oak down that we need to actually plank up.
Mm. So you'll be doing lots of furniture design.
Yes.
Quite useful. So will you dry them off, or you'll let them dry out for a few years, will you?
Yeah.
Air dry them. Yeah.
We air dry them, but then if I suddenly need to use it and it's a bit fresh, then I'll get it kiln dried. So this, we were talking about cedars, and you can see this one has dropped a load of lower limbs. And we had some snow a few years ago, lots of snow, and there was this almighty crash. And when we came out, one of them had gone, and now I get a tree surgeon just to keep an eye on it.
Yes.
So it doesn't do it anymore.
Mm.
But it's still there, and it's really quite lovely. It's part of the landscape of the place.
Yeah, it's beautiful, isn't it? Really nice. And it's well enough away. And so we got one client who's got a lot of mature trees up their drive. And when it's stormy, that drive is closed and people just don't use it, because there is always that thing with a drive underneath that you might just smash a guest, which would be unfortunate.
That you don't want to do.
No, definitely don't want to do. But then you look out, so you've got the formal bit of garden, and the transition to what looks a bit like parkland is very natural, isn't it? It's lovely. It just bleeds into it. But what is interesting is this sort of more formal garden, it looks like it drops down a bank or ha-ha or something.
Yeah, there's a bank there.
A bank. And then it looks like there's another bank on the right-hand side that looks like it was a tennis court, but it wasn't.
No, I don't think so.
Mm.
I haven't quite resolved that part of the garden yet. I mean, it's still like that. It's lovely in the summer because I leave it and it's a meadow. But now it just looks a bit scruffy and like a football pitch.
Oh, no, I wasn't criticising it, because I like that natural look here. Because you've got the contrast between the lovely formal bit here, and then it goes into that. I quite like that. You find that upsets you, does it?
I think there should be something there.
It could have been a croquet lawn, I suppose. Do you think? I don't know. They're normally pretty big, though, but it might have been. Have you got a set?
I've got a set of croquet, yes, but we play it on the front. And round, because that's always mown, but this, we keep long.
What you could do, if you don't like that steep bank, because that bank looks like it's almost a one in two bank that would be impossible to mow. I remember there's a lovely garden in France called Jardin Agapanthus, that's my French. But and they put yew hedges at the bottom, just a yew hedge, and then they planted the bank with ivy so you didn't see it.
Ah.
And the yew acted as a sort of green retaining wall. And I just thought it was such a clever idea because
that sounds
lovely.
Just
scalloped it. Yeah,
yeah.
And it was a very inexpensive green solution. And it worked wonderfully. But and your pots, I am so impressed, Sophie.
We've got a bit carried away, haven't we?
Crocus. Are they lovely iris? Iris reticulata.
Yes, we've got the lovely iris reticulata. In different colours.
Gosh, you've got lots of things out here, haven't you? Really nice. Very beautiful space. You can.
And then here, look, the roses here, you can see that swirly.
Oh, wow.
They're kind of like Japanese tracery or something, aren't they?
They are. They're so perfect. Perfect, perfect roses. And then hydrangea.
And then hydrangeas.
Did you put the hydrangea in?
Yeah, they're all in pots.
Oh,
they're all in pots here.
Because of the basement underneath.
Yeah.
Well, I've never seen a hydrangea of petiolaris in a pot that healthy. So do you have irrigation in those pots?
No,
we
just water them.
Gosh,
lots and lots of watering.
Yeah, must be twice a week at least. Yes.
Yeah. Every day.
Every day?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Can we look at your veg garden now?
The veg garden, yes, definitely. Do you want to quickly go into the fern garden?
Oh, yes, yes.
Which is
through here.
The fern
garden sounds nice.
So we're going to go left here and then under this yew arch.
Oh, and we drop a level down.
And then it goes down. Oh, look. It's violet. It's the first of the violet. And then this is quite a lovely space, very calm and filled with spring flowers.
So this space is defined by more yew hedging, and you've got a beautiful old, looks like a sort of stone bath.
Yeah.
That's probably 2 meters by, I don't know, 600. But you've brought the yew hedge up behind it like a raised circle, which is lovely, isn't it? It just shows it off.
So what I'm going to do, so I bought that bath at an auction a while ago, and then it instantly fell to pieces. So then I had it fixed. Is I'm going to make a little alcove behind it.
Oh, lovely.
So
yes.
You have a little...
Cut into it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They then, take a bit of time to do that there, because you cut in and it's all bald, and then they shoot back.
Well, it'll be a first for me, so I don't know.
We did some in Cambridge last year in a big old yew hedge. Because I do love alcoves. They really show off things nicely. But I'm amazed how just raising the yew hedge up behind it in that semicircle really shows it off, makes it more important, doesn't it?
So we're coming down here to the vegetable garden. And there was the kind of remnants of something here. So I fenced it in and I've planted beech around it.
And
then we're going to go through that gate over there.
So was there a walled garden here?
No.
And there wasn't.
Very
how
disappointingly.
Weird. Yeah. I wonder why not. Or
I
do you think
know.
There was one and they removed it? Have you looked at oldmaps.org?
There's nothing.
Why?
Oldmaps.org
is a really good website where you can go back for your plot and see the earliest maps that there are. And from that, you often find quite interesting things from it.
Okay.
What was there? You know, when you've got problems with lakes or waters and things like that, you can see, well, actually, there was a lake there or whatever. That's why it floods. Or, gosh, this is lovely. So you go through this little gate into the veg garden, which is beautifully laid out with hazel arches, raised beds, chickens. I see now why you had so many eggs in your kitchen. It is absolute peach, isn't it?
Thank you.
So when did you start this?
So I've had the house for 10 years and I think I pretty much started straight away. You can see down there's a greenhouse. So there was a retaining wall and the back wall, the tall back wall was there, and then I built the greenhouse back onto it.
So what was that building? That back wall?
I think it was a greenhouse, because there was bits of shards of glass and everything. But I put all of these fences in.
Yes.
The chickens are actually going to be moved. You can see this happening here. This is the new chicken run.
Why are you moving them?
Because this is a fruit cage.
Yes.
And I think there's some plum trees down there.
Yes.
I want that to be more of an orchard.
Right.
And I think... Yes. I don't know why I'm moving them. They've kind of got less space there.
I see. I'm sure they'd be very happy. They are beautiful looking chickens. They're fancy bantams.
They are lavender pekins.
Oh, very fancy.
And then we've got a very fancy cockerel from... Do you know Arthur Parkinson?
Yes.
Arthur gave it to me.
Oh,
and he's
I see.
Called James.
And you've got one cockerel to how many hens?
No, we've got a lot of cockerels.
Oh,
so
right.
Last year we had a lot of chicks. I think we had 24 chicks or something.
Right.
And so we've got quite a lot of cockerels. I don't know what to do with them, really.
Well, I wouldn't mind one.
Really?
Yes, I would
Absolutely.
Have a cockerel.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't know
so
what to
handsome.
Think about...
Come
oh, they are beautiful.
Let's put them in a box.
Yes. They're beautiful, aren't
we
they?
We had a rare plant fair last year and...
Here?
Yeah. And we've got another one on the 12th of May this year.
Gosh. And you propagate a lot of yours or not?
We're going to do some of the pellies
this
year. Because
yes.
that's, you know, something that we've got a lot of.
Oh, and the goose. What is that type of goose?
It's an Indian runner with a very special
duck. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry, I do know ducks. I did an experiment
Isn't
with my
she
ducks.
Lovely?
She is beautiful. I like her hairdo.
Yeah,
God,
fantastic.
That must have taken hours to do. I had some ducks and I got a whole load of slugs from the garden. I put them in front of them and said, there you are. And they said, what? I'm not eating those. Because that thing
really?
About ducks eating your slugs, it
and
certainly
snails.
Didn't work with mine. No, they just ignored them. Maybe I fed them too well. But, they are beauties. They really are.
Okay, well... Definitely, you can take one.
Oh, thank you very much indeed. So I have to say, for this time of year, this garden looks amazing. Really,
oh, thank
really
you.
Nice. It does look in apple pie order. I love your greenhouse. So the design of those doors with the Gothic arches on the greenhouse, is that you?
That was an option. So I kind of... So the greenhouse is made by a company called Woodpecker Joinery.
Oh, I know.
And this
yes.
is very... much the top end of what they do.
Yes.
So I said, I want, you know, show me what you can, what's your capabilities.
Yeah.
And they've done a great job and I'm absolutely thrilled with it.
I'm glad you said that because we're just putting a woodpecker one in for clients, so that's very nice
yeah.
to know.
But they came out and did it in January 21.
Yes.
And it was the most miserable weather, and they're based up in Stoke-on-Trent, so Port Merion is based in Stoke-on-Trent, and so it was a very nice sort of little connection there.
Mm.
I felt kind of like they were almost family in a way.
Oh, yes. Well, let's go and talk about Port Merion from your greenhouse. It's a bit chilly, shall we? Is that nice? I'd love to see your little pals. But tell me, what are your most exciting veg that you grow that you think give you more? What you like to grow best, the most interesting ones, because it's always great to hear about great veg, isn't it?
Well, I like a lot of the chicories. I like Puntarella particularly and
yes.
Casa Franco. So we're
yes.
just beginning those, and then also...
So those ones where you're picking those, just starting to pick now,
we're
are you?
We're picking some of them now.
Yes. I'm just about
You'll
to
see
start
around,
picking mine.
There's some there, look. Of the red
oh
ones.
Yeah yeah yes 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 they're lovely
called.
Yes yes yes
they're very beautiful aren't they so we're going to be doing a lot more of those
yeah they are good and you've still got some leeks I see so
we've
you've
still got some leeks
you've covered yours because of the leek fly before is it and keeping them from the soil
yeah
yeah I'm going to have to cover mine next year and I always think globe artichokes look fantastic in the winter don't they oh this is just divine
so there's an avenue coming down from that gate
yes.
of artichokes. And they're all different varieties. So we've got the small globe ones, so, and then we've got the violet ones.
I love globe artichokes, and I picked some up in France from markets there when you could do that. And you can get those, as you say, the small ones that you cook when they're just golf ball size.
Yeah.
And you just fry them whole thing. Is that what you do, or do you sauté them?
I tend to sort of prepare them, pare them back.
When you just cut the prickly bits off the ends of the leaves.
Yeah, and then you snap the edges and peel the stem.
Yes.
And then cook them in lots and lots of different ways. Sometimes raw as well, sliced raw.
But that when they're little golf ball size, you eat the whole thing, not yes. just the under
no,
bits of the leaves.
No, because there's no choke in
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah. They're amazing, aren't they? And yes, there's so many different ways and things that you can do with them. I think probably the best artichoke dish I ever had was a salad made of the hearts of globe artichokes.
Delicious.
But you would have to have like 40.
Well, we get masses.
Yeah.
We get masses and masses.
Yeah. And what is so nice is they look so good. And then towards the end of the summer, they sort of start to fall to bits, don't they? And then you cut them down and the new leaves come up almost straight away. So throughout all the dead period, you've got these lovely basil leaves, which I think just look stunning.
They're kind of silver and architectural.
Yeah.
We find in winter that we need to cover them in straw. They're a bit tender and we haven't
Seriously?
Done enough. Yes.
Oh, God.
We have lost a few. You can see
that.
Here.
That's interesting. So I would have thought you'd be warmer in the winter than us. That is fascinating. But back to Port Merryn, which you mentioned there. And so the first time I obviously had heard of you, but then my daughter, before she went off to work as a landscape architect in Dubai, said, when I come back, I'm going to buy the Sophie Conran white Port Merryn dinner set. And she was so cross because when she came back from Dubai, I'd seen it and bought it.
So you had it.
I had it. You've beaten me too, and I can't buy it now because you've got it. But that is it's so good because I have to say I've dropped plates on the floor and they bounce. And they look wonderful, and they go in the dishwasher, they go in the arga. I could put it in the hottest temperature in the oven and it doesn't matter. But they're just amazing, aren't they? That was a revolution, I thought, that thing. And it's been so popular. How long has it been going there?
I met them in 2005, and we launched in 2006. So it was a pretty quick turnaround. And the sort of idea for them came... obviously, I've been brought up in a family, talked about design a lot, and I saw what people like IKEA were doing, and they were doing an extremely good job of a perfect design, a white dinner service. But what I really felt that the idea that plates are made out of clay is mud, it's part of what we live with. Obviously, as somebody who loves gardens, I like mud. And also the element of the human hand. So it was kind of going back into the history of where it had come from. And for it to feel like it was somehow part of us.
So it's interesting. For anyone who doesn't know the set we're talking about, it's white, but it's got concentric rings. And so it's got strong texture to it. And it's also got a slight imperfection, hasn't it?
Yes.
Running through, there's a line that doesn't tally
up.
Well,
when I started working with Port Merryn, I asked if we could work with a potter, and we actually worked with an amazing guy called Kevin, who's a master potter.
Yes.
And he threw all of the pieces. So I would draw them up, and I'm a cook as well. So I had a large collection, and I've also got a passion for collecting plates and kitchen equipment.
Yeah.
And so my cooking very much influenced the pieces, but also I wanted to work with Kevin, and he made the pieces, and the marks are from the throw marks.
Because when I first saw it on the first plate, I thought, oh, is it a second? And then I noticed that they all had them.
Yeah.
And I suppose what I like about it is a pared back design, but it's got strong personality and I never tire of it. And I can see I'll have that set until I die and I won't ever want another one, which is
because
it's also, I use it in the dining room and I use it in the kitchen. It fits every occasion.
Yeah. It's very good at sort of transitioning between informal and formal. And as you say, it's so completely practical. It's made of porcelain and
it's porcelain,
fired very, very high.
Because it's a very good price point for porcelain.
Yeah.
It's fired very high, which is why I can drop it on the floor and it doesn't smash.
Yeah.
Bad luck for the Greeks. You couldn't celebrate with your plates. Nothing would break. Oh dear. But the whole Port Merion thing I find fascinating because I work with them. I must have been in something like 1990 something, and I did a garden at Chelsea for them and Wyvale. And the story of Sir Clough Williams Ellis, who built Port Merion, and he had said that he wanted some rich benefactor to come along and say, Clough, build me a town or a village. But he never came along. So as an architect, he designed the whole thing two-thirds scale. So his building costs immediately massively reduced. And some of the buildings were from papier-mâché and chicken wire.
It's an amazing place.
It really is. And such style and things. And then his daughter, Susan, who I think I might have met once.
Yes,
and she
did.
Had my uncle named a rose after her. He worked with her. And she started up the pottery. Did you meet her?
Yes, I did. She was an amazing woman.
Mm.
And a complete workaholic. And she loved ceramics. It was her thing.
Yeah.
She did some incredibly groundbreaking pieces. And she was eccentric.
Oh, yes.
You know, she was this fantastic, so English in her eccentricity and what she was doing. And it's great that she was such a huge success. And she remained herself throughout her life. She didn't sort of become too corporate or anything.
Yes.
She was very, very driven by her love of ceramics and design.
Yeah, no, an extraordinary woman. And they now, Port Merion, have bought out Spode and Royal Worcester. And
yes.
So whereas a lot of the traditional English china companies are finding times difficult, they've moved on. They brought in great young designer, Sophie Conran.
Don't know how young.
and are stealing the show again. No, that's brilliant. And talking about your life, so I was amazed when I looked through on Wikipedia, dare I say, so I hope it's not all wrong, your career path, and I have to say, you have done a huge range of things, haven't you, in your life, which is probably what makes you do everything so well now. You brought so many skills to it, really. So you started off as a milliner, age 17. Then you went to join Jasper to design clothes and things.
Oh, no, I was making cups of tea.
Oh, making cups of tea. Oh, right. Okay, so I have
and cutting
upgraded
out.
You
yes,
there.
Thanks.
And then you did interior design, and then you worked on the Design Museum, which your father started, which was brilliant.
I was doing buying for the shop there.
Oh, right. So
that was
very useful. And then you launched store Wong Sing Jones.
Wong Sing Jones, corner shop of the world. That was great fun. That was on All Saints Road, and it was a great little shop.
Oh, right.
And I was also... So I was working for the Design Museum then, doing the buying and direction and working with their different exhibitions that they were doing. So there was, like, for instance, there was one on motorcycles. So I sourced lots of motorcycle pieces, or there was one on Scandinavian design. So it was a lot of curating the shop a bit like what was going on.
Yeah,
it was great fun.
Fantastic. And then you lived in Australia in the 90s, so you've got an international feel about you, obviously. Then you returned to Devon to rear pigs and grow veg. Now, that bit. What sort of pigs? And what was that? Was that just back to nature, living in the country life, the good life, following Felicity Kendall?
I think that's probably been very influential. Mm. But I'm a bit of Margot as well.
Oh, no.
Definitely.
No. Surely not.
Yes.
This glamorous girl standing opposite me. I just don't equate you to Margot, but never mind. Carry on.
Devon was a weekend place. And we had... They were Berkshire Blacks, I think, the pigs. We only had four.
Yes.
And they were extremely tasty.
Yeah.
They were really... So that was... It was... We bought this place, we renovated it, and we... Yes, it was lovely.
Mm.
Pigs and chickens and vegetables and... Not very successful.
Well, it is a big learning curve, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, we've got pigs and vegetables, and I have to say, you learn with every batch. I think I have had Boucher Blacks once, but Oxford Sandy and Blacks are my all-time favourites.
Okay,
I
why?
I think they taste it. They're beautiful colour, but I know that's a ridiculous reason, but they're this lovely sort of chestnut with black spots. They don't fat, because ours live in a wood, and we give them next to no concentrates. And it's actually very difficult to stop a pig getting too fat. And I like my bacon with the rind on. And you never buy bacon with the rind on now, do you? Because you have to cut so much fat off. And with a rare breed, it's quite difficult to get. So I have to keep them on quite a lean diet to make sure I can still have my rind and not have to cut the fat off.
Oh.
And they're good for that. And they're just very friendly, nice personalities, great fun.
I really, really want to have pigs again.
Mm. I do think in a woodland they're ideal. Yeah. They just
so we've got lots of woods.
Mm.
And do you move them around?
No, we just have. We have probably half an acre for two pigs.
Okay.
So they are in clover, and they can get as much from the soil with the worms and the bugs as they need to eat, really. But I give them a little bit of concentrates to keep them very tame.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, a lot of these people just have, they feed their pigs ad lib commercially. So they just eat, and then they kill them.
Yeah.
Whereas I use a much slower like that, better tasting pork. It's a completely different meal, doesn't it, when it's like that, the pork. I think it's similar to the acorn-fed pork that you get, because I think
in Spanish, acorn
yeah, and
pork
I don't
so
believe
they
eat acorns all year round. I think they just finish them on those, and I, because you don't have acorns all year round,
no.
I think they're living from the grubs in the woods, and they have a bit at the end. Whereas I finish mine on quince and apples from the orchard, and so they go off after that. And I give them a huge bottle of cider in their concentrate before they go, so it's not so bad. Because I do feel very bad on that
I know.
Day. Yeah,
well,
awful.
They're lovely animals, aren't they?
So beautiful. So,
so
beautiful.
I've heard that they eat Japanese knotweed.
Well, I haven't got any Japanese knotweed. I'm sure they would.
Yes.
I took off my gardening gloves once and put them down, and a Dexter cow came up behind me and ate it. And I found it in the field about 4 years later, and it was perfect. It hadn't been destroyed at all. So I think a pig would definitely eat Japanese knotweed.
Yeah.
Yes. No problem there. And wagon wheels. They love those too. But getting back, so then having done all these jobs, you then developed the Port Marion range, and then you developed in 2013 the Sophie Conran shop.
Yes.
So you haven't been sitting down doing nothing for the last 30 odd years. You've been at it full time. You're busy, busy, busy. And now have you really found your métier, do you think?
I don't know if you can ever really say that, because life evolves, doesn't it?
Oh my God, you're going to go off and do another 10 things, aren't
I don't
you?
Know. I don't know. I mean, right. Look, this is heaven in here. We've got jasmine out and lemons and...
beautiful lemons there. Lots of pelargoniums. Yes, your jasmine, my favourite jasmine, polyanthemum, isn't it? The semi-tender one. Is that right? Is that that one? Mine's not
if
out
you
yet,
say so.
Mine's in the porch. Mine's not in a heated greenhouse, but it's wonderful. But would you say you would... I thought maybe the Conrans are now a dynasty, because this, you've been your father, and then there's your generation, and then your children.
Yes.
Is it Coco Conran? What a fantastic name. Beaten only by Rocky Cocker, who's the son of one of the producers of Gardener's Question Time. I think Coco Conran is wonderful. And so I think it's four generations to technically be a dynasty, but you're almost there.
We're nearly there.
Nearly there.
I don't know whether that's a good aspiration to have.
Well, I think so, because a lot of these families that create wonderful businesses... you have the all-powerful father, and then the children, the offspring, often just don't make it, do they? And I think it's a bit like when you have a big oak tree and then it sets its seedlings. It's suppressing all the growth from coming up underneath, you know. But you obviously, you've got this huge design impetus in all of those generations coming down, and it spurred you on, and you're just going on to do better things.
I think it was just a general atmosphere of excitement and enthusiasm and curiosity. So that's what I think drives us all.
Yeah.
And oh, well, that's a good idea. I better go and do it.
And then you spread it on to further generations and they like it too. That's, that's so,
so
good.
So both my daughter, Coco, and my son, Felix, are in design and, you know, very, very active and doing amazing things.
Gosh, so wait for the next generation. Yes, as well. So I always bring... my guest a present, and I brought you a present which I have to say changed my gardening life. I don't know if it will change yours, but these are amazing gardening trousers, and they're by Genus, and they are the first company that I know that developed clothes just for gardeners, and I love them because I wear them over a pair of leggings in the summer or the winter, but in a lot of the year actually, because they got built-in knee pads. They're waterproof, you don't sweat in them. They've got loads of pockets with reinforced, so you can put your secateurs in there and they don't eat through the bottoms. They're just amazing. And so I will go out, and if you've got warm legs and a warm head, I think you can garden any day of the year, really. And so they've changed my gardening life. So I bought you a present, and I thought you might
so
like them.
Kind. Well, I'm very excited about them. I can't wait to try them out. I might just live in them.
You might just. But I put them over leggings because I come outside the kitchen door and I'm covered in mud and I don't want to bring it all into the kitchen. So I strip off outside and I'm still decent. I don't want to scare the neighbours. But anyway, it's been fascinating hearing about you and your life. I'm so impressed. Your kitchen garden is to die for. I'm going to
thank
go
you.
Back and do something about mine.
Thank you, thank you.
But no, it's been lovely. Thank you very much indeed.